Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Hey, wake up. New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, ugh, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
This is Jim Semivan, and you are listening to That UFO Podcast.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to That UFO Podcast. My name is Andy, and this is a kind of part two to the first part, which was the bonus review of Luis Elizondo's book, Imminent. Thank you for all the wonderful feedback. Joining me again to follow up with Luis Elizondo's sort of media tour he's done since, I've got Dan again. Dan, welcome back.
Hello, hello. Thank you for having me.
I think the mic will sound nicer this time. I moved my little station about last time, and I was a little bit further away when I actually heard back the recording.
Oh no!
Really annoyed myself.
You need one of those Madonna headsets, you know?
Oh no! It just reminds me of my call center days, which I still have, but you know, don't do that anymore. But yeah, listen. So we're going to look at the media tour that Lou has done after the book's release. Some really interesting comments, conversation, discussion points that have happened since. The book we've gone through in great detail, folks. It was a two-hour recording. Loads of people got in touch. Sorry for all the folks who we didn't include. What we'll do this time is run through some interviews that Lou Elizondo has done on News Nation with Ross Coulter. Surprisingly, it was on Talk is Jericho, the Chris Jericho podcast, almost first was the audio one that dropped. He's been on Joe Rogan, of course, interview on CNN. Just a few days ago. And what was that other one, Dan? The
TW? The World of Big Ideas.
Yes, the World of Big Ideas podcast. Sorry, seems a relatively new one, not one I'm familiar with.
Yeah, I think so.
The guy seems to have like a good setup. He had Lou there in person and stuff as well. So yeah, all those have been done, and there are more coming in the coming days and weeks, I'm sure, as well. And we'll be interested to see how long Lou Elizondo stays in the media limelight this time, if you want to call it that, because first time round he was a bit of an ever present on the podcast circuit for a while, which I think is it really disparaging myself to call podcasting like the lowest rung of media, but like, you know, when you're like, people are bringing themselves down to like just random podcasts, and Lou had done some really small podcasts back then. I don't think that'll be the case this time. We'll probably get to that discussion at some point, but it'll be interesting to see kind of what happens of this. So will we kick off with the News Nation interview, Dan? I think this was the one that we were expecting, one of the first Ross Coulter big association with Luis Elizondo. News Nation's sort of been the UFO news channel. It's a relatively new channel, and I think it saw early on that this was a topic, a discussion that was one gaining some press in the US a few years back, as we know. Through the early days of the UAP task force announcements, the David Grush stuff last year, the hearings the year before that with Brian Moultrie, And I think they saw this gets numbers, this does well on social media engagement. This is a good way while we're building a channel to have a serious conversation about other stuff and get people's eyes. And they've done it well. And Ross Coulthart's secured a position there with his Reality Check show that I've caught quite a few of as well. And Ross, of course, I think makes sense that him and Lou, knowing each other, have ended up collaborating on one of Lou's first long form interviews. Yeah, so no surprise there. News Nation getting this one, Dan.
No, no surprise at all. News Nation have been, I mean, they're on this issue, aren't they? They've been consistently really good at it. I think the one blip in their record for me would be that they didn't ask presidential candidates the UAP question when they had a chance to. But that's small fry. They've been there for David Grush. They've been there for Lou. They've really championed this issue. And generally when people say UFOs aren't covered in the mainstream media, go to News Nation. You'll see it covered.
Yeah. So this one, I'll say my slight issue with it straight off the bat, and it's nothing I wouldn't say to Ross himself. Confessions of a UFO Hunter, I'm not the biggest fan of the title.
UFO Hunter, specifically?
Yeah, yeah. And you know I've had issues with that in the past, that title itself. But I suppose, to be fair, the book's title is Inside the Pentagon's Hunt for UFOs, so it's
there
on the
front cover of the book. Yeah, I guess you could make an argument, couldn't you?
Yeah. So yeah, I suppose you can't really argue that with that. But there's a lot of kind of key call-outs for me. So I've got stuff here in a relative order, Dan. I'll start running through. Sure. Lou Elizondo, Ross, we are not alone, and the US government is aware of that fact.
That's my first highlighted note here. Yeah. We don't share notes if you're listening to this.
Yeah, yeah, we don't. And I've said that, haven't I, Dan, many times. I like to just come on and talk and see what happens. That was one of the VT highlights, I think, in a lot of the trailers for the interview.
Yeah.
And to be fair, very similar is going to come back up in a few others. If you have person A from the government or any government talking about UFOs, those are the kind of key call-outs that are going to stick with the general public, aren't they? Legislation's one thing. Let's be fair. The general public's not getting their appetite wet at the thought of legislation passing on UFOs or UAP. That's just not going to happen. It's like being like a big fan of the cinema and looking forward to a really niche movie coming out from one of your favorite directors who's got Adam Sandler out of a comedy role and playing like a really dark character and like a monologue piece set in 1980s France, right? You're going to really enjoy it, but most of the public won't. They're going to go and see, you know, Click or whatever it is, you know, a kind of run the numbers movie. So I think from this point of view, there's a lot to like in this interview. A lot comes up. So I've got here, first off, Dan, and I've not read back over my notes, so this will be interesting. Like in the book, Lou is discussing various UFO cases. He mentions Colares, Lonnie Zamora, Roswell. For some, this is added confirmation these events occurred. Others are saying it's Lou just repeating the hearsay. On that, Dan, what's your take on that? To what extent could there be some of these events being disinformation, incompetence over the decades, or legitimized by Lou talking about them, or is there no change?
I think there's, I mentioned Roswell last time because Roswell, for me, the two craft, Lou talking about two craft, one that flew away and one that didn't and was recovered, that for me kind of gave that more weight. But having had time, like since we recorded and thinking about it, you know, when you go into Lou's book, it's Hal telling him this stuff, and there doesn't seem to be other sources for it. And it coming back to Hal doesn't fill me with glee, to be honest, just because Hal doesn't really speak much about this stuff. He doesn't say where he found out about this. And when you look at ORSAP and the research they were doing, because there was no prior research they could access, they had to look at everything. So they were looking at tabloids and, you know, just reports that from places that are less than desirable, I guess, but they had to, because that was just the nature of the beast then. Mm-hmm. So it just leaves me with a question mark, and I'd love Lou to kind of expound upon it to find out whether it Hal is the sole source for this kind of stuff, or if he'd heard it elsewhere and or went off and found some more evidence after Hal told him about it. Because for me, Hal Putov saying, you know, two UFOs crashed in Roswell isn't enough to say that's a confirmation.
I think with some of those cases, though, nothing changes for me in the sense of, other than being shown the physical bodies or the craft that crashed, then it is all hearsay and will be hearsay. And I think that would then come down to the folks who are telling Lou Elizondo, Hal Puthoff, Chris Mellon, whoever it may be in the government, that this stuff's happened, and it's going to be stories and testimony passed down through generations of military, you know, meetings, cabal meetings in the background and coffees in the corridor, really, to say, you know, as a new guy, Lou having that conversation with Hal, as talked about in the book, and asking, you know, Roswell, so that really happened? And Hal saying, yeah, because I'm just in my head, the way I look at it, and this doesn't make me disbelieve Roswell, just the way I piece this together and I'm comfortable with, is that Hal Puthoff has had conversations with other folks, given his incredibly tight links to various intelligence communities and officialdom and what he's been involved with over the decades. He's very well respected. He's been told this by a five-star general in a corridor of power, you know, and he's been in a meeting where something else has been brought up and someone's bumped him and said, this is really similar to what happened at Roswell, you know, I've read the file. And just that, as we have talked about, that kind of weight of credibility in those folders, the evidence folder piling up, rather than having one smoking gun, I just imagine folks like Hal hear so much of this stuff from people they trust that there's something to it for them, and that then gets passed on. I get why a lot of folks maybe aren't comfortable with that as being enough for them, but I think the further back you go, it must be so difficult to really have evidence. And even if Luis Elizondo himself chose to go and investigate Roswell, how much can you even investigate at this point?
Yeah, I mean, Arrow has said as much, right? That when they're talking about cases that they're investigating, if they look at modern day cases, we've got all these sensor suites that they collect data that they can look at and they can kind of paint a picture after the fact. But when you're going back to the 40s, unless, you know, there's a big red sign on it that says Roswell hidden files here, you can't find anything. Mm. So we've said it before, like some of these cases, you almost have to be comfortable with never knowing. Even if disclosure happened tomorrow, there's no guarantee we'd ever find out the truth about Roswell.
Yeah, that Truth and Reconciliation Commission, similar to what happened in South Africa, is never going to happen from a UFO point of view. My opinion always, you know, caveat that. I should put that in as a thing at the start of the show. This is just my opinion, save me saying it. But disclosure, whatever that looks like, happens. AD, you know, Zabel and Dolan talked about it, folks. If we got all that, you know, all that comes out, all that truth comes out, no one in the general public is going to be calling for military folks, men and women, to take a stand, take an oath, and talk about all the stuff they have covered up over the years. It won't happen. People won't care. They will move on with the bigger conversations. So yeah. I just can't see that being an issue or even something that we'd have to worry about.
And even if I can imagine that people listen to this like, well, we might have church style hearings where everything's kind of laid in the open. We might have those hearings, but again, the evidence doesn't necessarily exist, and those hearings will just be to paint a picture of the subject being obfuscated by certain people in the government. As soon as you get to classified stuff, they're not going to share that with us. They're not going to write a book and just be like, hey, here's everything we found out behind closed doors during the UFO closed door hearings. It's just not going to happen. We need to know, like, if you think about our need to know, we just need to know that we're not alone. From the government's perspective, that is. I mean, I want to know everything, but they will just go, well, as long as the public know we're not alone and we can move forward now, that's a good thing. And then everything else will be behind closed doors.
And is it also fair, though, you're saying everything else being behind closed doors? For me, at that point of disclosure, I really should get Bryce or Dolan back on, or both of them. That would be nice. That, like, after disclosure, you just begin a whole new cover-up of, okay, so here's what's out in the open. They know we're not alone. What can we now control? What needs to come out? What will satisfy the public and what won't?
Yeah.
And I think there's then a whole new... I would have to write stuff down and come back to this, but the idea of, right, who has turned up? What's been disclosed? Okay, the Greys have showed up with some mantis beings. No one's talking about orbs, though. Can we leave that to the side? Can we just dismiss that? Mm-hmm. Or actually, we had a race of beings we found in a crash in the 80s that have never came back up since. Can we totally dismiss that? We don't have to go back to it. Maybe there's no triangles flying about in the sky post-disclosure. So again, can we keep that technology secret and not talk about it? There's a whole different conversation that then goes away. Maybe they've found life. Yeah, 100%. Maybe they've found life elsewhere already on a different planet using the James Webb, for example, or other telescopes we don't know about that they'll probably have out there, let's be fair. And they can go, can we just be quiet about this now and not talk about that civilization that isn't that far away that we don't think is visiting us, but, you know, whole other conversations open up. But like you say, I think for most people, just that we are officially not alone, that's it, out there in public conversation. That's it. That's the topic. Like, you know, full stop, let's move on to the next chapter.
Yeah, which would be, who are they, right? And then you'd be discussing the multitudes or whatever,
Lou shows the picture of an alleged implant, Dan. He mentions there being activity around the implant and that it was moving on its own under observation. I think that was important for me, that you can talk about implants to folks in the UFO community and many of us will be interested. Some won't, some will, some indifferent. But to show the general public a picture of, here's something that we found behind someone's ear, that's not going to really get, again, that kind of urge to know more. But to say that it moved on its own when we tried to get it, that's something a bit different. That's a bit interesting, yeah?
Yeah, absolutely. And it was suggested that these things were, when doctors studied them, they were found to have their own metabolism, that maybe the bodies that they were put in were actually fueling them, because after a certain amount of time of being outside the person's body, they cease to kind of do anything and move. So it's really fascinating, and especially if you look at the technology, because if that is a technology, you're looking at kind of biotech, right? And that's where we're getting to now. And these things always seem to be like that little kind of step ahead of us on our cutting edge, you know? So yep. I wonder, if we make things like that, do the implants start looking something different? I don't know. But it's something tangible, you know? You can see it. There's a photo of it. There's doctor reports and things like that of just weird anomalous behavior by these things that are found under abductee's skin, and kind of creepy in a way, I think.
Moro Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.5 billion back to our customer owners over the last 9 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.
I love how that's the least intelligent you've sounded for a while there when you said doctor's reports. It reminds me when I called the petrol station the petrol yard. It just doesn't sound right. Medical reports, like doctor.
Medical reports, there you go. Yeah. My brain did like a, you know, just a skip, like a record skip in. And so doctor's reports do is what it is.
Constantly, as you know. Yeah. linked to that, Lou Elizondo then talks about the caudate putamen. Is that fair enough for pronunciation, folks? That bit of your brain that we mentioned in the last one, it's linked to psychic powers, ESP, intuition, remote viewing. Lou talks about the work of Dr. Gary Nolan at Stanford Research at Stanford University, talks about the this being the part of the brain that's already bigger than normal when the person is, you know, more psychic, to put it bluntly, or after an incident, that part of the brain can appear to be enlarged. This is talked about in the book, talked about on here. I think something to remember early on here with the media tour stuff is there's a lot of folk watching this who either won't or haven't have seen the book. Some folks won't want to go and buy the book, but they'll go, this guy's wrote a book on UFOs. Here's what he's saying, some really incredible stuff. So
yeah,
it's not the same audience that's buying the book that's going and listening to this as well.
Yeah, totally agree.
And he also, just I think to tie it in here, he talks about psychic espionage, talks about the Stargate program discussed in the book with Russell Targ, good timing for me, magic, and Hal Puthoff. What were your thoughts then hearing about this kind of stuff, Dan, on that platform?
Really interesting. In the book it was debated. Some people like that Lou kind of is into remote viewing, other people less so. But it seems to be, along with the caudate putamen thing. It seems to just be getting drilled into us as part of the conversation over and over and over and over and over again from all these different people. So it feels important. It feels like something that we all really have to internalize and understand. And the idea that the Chordate Putamon is responsible for intuition and remote viewing uses intuition, that's a really intriguing link there for me. And it kind of plugs into UFOs when you think about how they could be, and I'm going to use, you know, bunny ear quotes here, psychically piloted. It would just be like Neuralink, right? It's not magic. It's just kind of a hidden kind of thing, technology. It's really interesting, and I find it compelling. Lou spoke about it being maybe a vestigial kind of capability that before we had language, we would communicate with each other in these ways. We spoke about it on the last show, so I don't want to go into it too much because, you know, sure, I'll talk about remote viewing for 20 minutes. But I find it really, really interesting to the point where, you know, I try it out and I practice it, and hopefully I can get you to do it with me one day, and we'll record it and we'll put it out as a bonus episode or something. Success or failure.
But on that, so I've got a discussion point here. The idea that when you remote view, are you potentially at that point inviting that hitchhiker effect? So I'm thinking about in movies where psychics and whatnot use Ouija boards or other ways to contact the dead, whatever it might be, they're opening that door to somewhere else that maybe doesn't quite close back over fully. You're kind of opening up something else. Another branch is happening. And on one hand, it can make it sound like an excuse for not using these abilities that often. But, you know, Evan Almighty style, you know, where literally, oh, I've got these powers, I will literally spend all day remote viewing stuff. But also, is it the case that there's a real and serious consequence to using this or misusing it?
I think so. And you said Ouija boards there, and I think I'm going to just pick up on that and drill in on that there's a lot of crossover between all of these kind of supernatural spaces, whether we're talking about ghosts, poltergeists, UFOs, shadow people, orbs in the hallway. It all seems to kind of follow each other. So there is definitely a downside to kind of practicing this stuff. And this is why I always recommend people, you know, give it a go, but be taught by someone. Because if you open that door and you kind of lose yourself in some way, it's going to be terrifying to you because you're not going to know what to do or how to deal with it. So yeah, you know, open the door by all means, take a look. But they say when you look at the phenomena, it looks back. So be mindful of that as well, because something could, you know, I was going to say follow you home, but in remote viewing, you'd probably be doing it at home, right?
You would imagine so. they show the tic-tac gimbal videos again, remembering this is a different audience, big audience, seeing these videos maybe for the first time, or maybe they're videos they've seen over the past few years on the news, on YouTube, and clips on TikTok, whatever they may be, with no context behind them. Now they're
just
hearing
gonna say
more.
That.
Yeah, now yeah. They're seeing more context, aren't they? And even Lou Elizondo, again, at this point, I'll stop saying Lou Elizondo constantly, mentions that these things could be from the ocean. We don't know. I think there's a lot of those comments throughout the various interviews he's done and passages he's discussed where he's leaving that in. Either is that deliberate, or is it that idea that, you know, we should be looking at the oceans again, because this isn't a new conversation, but it seems to be there's a few times this has dropped in.
Yeah, I think so. Lou is very experienced in terms of knowing what like sensors the US has, whether it's in space, you know, he worked with Space Force, or whether it's in space or in the ocean, and there's a whole classified network of submarine microphones all across the world that the US has. But we still don't have what they refer to as just whereabouts. There's apparently, there's one off the coast of Florida, just referencing Bob Fish there, where he said, you know, things were coming in out of the ocean. It would be a hydrophone that would pick those kind of things up. And we're putting more and more of these in the ocean, by the way, like every year, not just for government purposes, but for doing whale song research and things like that. And we hear about it all the time now, especially with AI kind of becoming prolific. You know, they want as much data as they can gather. But just to say that we don't have full domain awareness. Everyone thinks that we would know if something came through our atmosphere. We would know if there was something in the ocean. The Earth is huge. Like, yes, there are bigger places out there, but the Earth is huge. And I guarantee that if another species came here, that they could just hide if they wanted to. So it really begs the question, why are these things tripping our senses? Why are these things visible to us? We spoke before, and loads of people ask this question as well. Why are the flashing lights on UFOs if they want to be hidden? They're tantalizing questions. And until we know who they are and what they want and what their intent is, we may never be able to answer.
I think something that I would expect to hear asked of Lou, or at least definitely cleared up, because an awkward moment in the interview was Lou has Ross reading out a list of private contractors that he mentions in the book.
Yes.
And Ross asks him a really simple question, to which Lou doesn't give him a simple answer, and he should, definitely should have. He says, "It's true that it's in my book." Now, I don't think either he's misspoken, which surely you repeat that and do it again on an interview, or you clear that up there and then, because Ross asks him, "Is that true?" And he says, "It's true that it's in my book." That's not a good answer.
I was discussing this with Elena. Like, why would he be able to put it in his book but not say to Ross, yes? And there's a disconnect, right? And the only thing that we could come up with was that because Dobser approved the book, Lou might have NDAs that precludes him from naming these companies or from being as conclusive when kind of saying this when he's in interviews. And Lou might be kind of leaning back and going, well, I know they've cleared it, so they can't come and take me to jail for just saying it's in my book. My book's fine. I know my book was approved. It's cool. But that's the only thing. Apart from that, which is like, maybe, then I don't know why he wouldn't have just said yes.
Surely, if it was the case of what you've just said, he would have given the context of, you know, there are certain things that I'm not permitted to say.
You'd think.
Due to certain NDAs. Just for context, however, I can say that it's true that statement you've given me is in my book.
Yeah, exactly.
And that would have cleared that up. However, that's something I would expect to hear cleared up by someone else in the coming days.
It'd be worth speaking to Ross Coulthard as well and saying to him, like, hey, what happened there? You know, I'm sure there was a reason for it sounding the way it did. Maybe Lou did explain it further and it was just cut out.
Yeah, and the editing, yeah.
Could be as easy as that, you know?
Yeah, and folks, what you'll find is this is probably the interview that's discussed. We're going to discuss the most. We've got the most notes for, because the others, a lot of stuff's repeat throughout or isn't touched on and whatnot, or has gone over in the book. My last thing from that particular interview, Dan, is the Collins Elite discussion comes back around again. People hearing there is a cabal inside the US government that wants to keep this secret, and discusses a first-hand meeting with a member of said Collins Elite who says it's demonic and we shouldn't be looking into this. Again, statements we have heard before, statements many of the UFO community have heard before. A lot of the general public, though, hearing that for the first time, I think that's one that makes people go, shadowy government group now, and this guy's talking about it. It'll put some off, but I think it's one that needs to be said. If that's what Lou believes is true or is true, then that's the kind of thing that moves this conversation up a notch, I think, for folks who maybe were thinking about getting involved. If they weren't going to, they weren't going to anyway. Maybe it'll put some people off in terms of, you know, shit, if it's demonic, I don't want us to look into this. You know, there's a lot of folks that listen to this sort of religious, you know, great, well done. I'm not. And yeah, I thought that was a good one to have in there, and it should be talked about.
Yeah, I think so. It's relevant. The thing that surprised me most with this interview was seeing Lou's wife, Jen.
Yes.
Talking about things. Well, how did you find it? I don't want to be like, I visited and talked with Jen. So you tell me, what did you think?
My first note after the thing about the title was actually, nice to see Jennifer Elizondo on the interview. It really helps humanize Lou to a wider audience. I think folks that are going to go down the disinfo route and all that kind of stuff are always going to be like that. But I think at least, like, you know, there is the man, there is his family, there is his wife. I'm sure he doesn't want to get his kids involved in all this, because why would you? But yeah, it's part of the story. And it was nice to see her in there and share a little bit of, you know, this is a real thing that they have gone through. People mentioned in the book, a few people messaging me as well about feeling really bad that through TTSA, you know, Lou and his family getting that role, relocating, losing that job really quickly, the salary almost disappearing overnight. Some folks actually saying they were quite disappointed in Tom DeLonge and the company for that. I'm sure there's some financial stuff that people won't go into from that point of view on it, but that Lou ended up basically in their trailer living to try and kind of make ends meet. Jennifer had two jobs she had to pick up. Again, folks will be listening to this relating to that, but thinking
about Jen is jobs. Stupidly qualified as well. I just want to emphasize that. Ridiculously qualified. So the fact that she would had to go to Target and stack shelves, like, not to, you know, diminish that job, because, you know, but it's just
that maybe wasn't conveyed well though, Dan. I don't think necessarily in the small clip that was shown, because it came across slightly like that. What they were trying to convey was the fact that Lou was in a really well-paid position, a very comfortable job, very comfortable position. They gave that up for what they thought was going to be something that would still give them the lifestyle they have and are accustomed to, and things very quickly changed, not overnight, but, you know, a very short period of time where they lost their house. You know, you worry for your children, you're then picking up multiple jobs, all that stuff, which I appreciate. You know, I was working for the company I work for and doing delivery driving for a takeaway for a couple of years, just to do extra stuff when I started the podcast as well. So I can appreciate folks having to work multiple jobs just to make ends meet, but they came from having a much healthier lifestyle than that, and it suddenly was gone from them as well. So wasn't conveyed well.
The RV stuff, you know, it sounds quaint, like Elena and I just bought an RV to go traveling, but that's our choice. You know, we're not backed into a corner having to do that to make ends meet. It's very different kind of, you know, working a 9-to-5 job and then going home and, you know, you can't stretch out and have a bath. It's a case of you're in this box, essentially. And it's taxing. And I thought Jen really communicated well how exhausting this whole thing has been for anyone. Because Lou is very calm and collected when he speaks about this stuff. Because this is what he does. Whereas with Jen, you could see the emotion coming through a bit more. And, you know, I would expect if Lou and Jen's children were on there, it would come through even more. Because, yeah, these are people, like Jen testified in this interview, that she saw the orbs disappearing through the wall, floating down the hallway. Imagine not knowing anything about orbs and witnessing that. Just mind-blowing what they've been through.
Absolutely. Next up, talk is Jericho, Dan. So Chris Jericho, former WWE and AEW, that's for April, that reference, wrestler Chris Jericho. He has a podcast, Talk is Jericho, and he had Lou on one of the first interviews, which I think was recorded even before the book came out, because Jericho mentions that he had to sign an NDA to read the book. So I'm guessing he got that pretty early on. Sizable audience on Talk is Jericho as well. He's a popular guy for many. So, yeah, it was pretty cool for me to see him on there. In terms of the interview itself, Chris Jericho clearly doesn't have a big interest or passion for UFOs. His questions are quite paint by number. I imagine someone read the book for him, passed over the notes, and got him to have that conversation. So, yeah, you're opening up the conversation up to a bigger audience. And I've only got a couple of things on it. So, for me, Lou Elizondo mentioning the reason for leaving that information for the redactions in there is so people can see that they're happening factions, because this means the government isn't this topic. Dan?
Moro Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA. Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited. Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
This is the story of the one. As a custodial supervisor at a high school, he knows that during cold and flu season, germs spread fast. It's why he partners with Grainger to stay fully stocked on the products and supplies he needs, from tissues to disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Also that he can help students, staff, and teachers stay healthy and focused. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
I'm going to take this bit out, because what the fuck have I written here? Or should I leave this in, folks? Elizondo mentions the reason for leaving that information in there so they can see that they're... I dictated this. That's why it's pure fucked up.
Oh, it's Siri used to blame. Yeah. Well, it's fine. We'll blame Apple. I think you should leave this bit in. It happens.
Dictated it to Google Docs. I might leave it in for the people who pay for the podcast because they expect this kind of mediocrity. And they're like, oh my God, listen to Andy, like, not being able to read his own note. Yeah, I dictated that. So, right, it's on the Dopser thing about, you know, the reason for writing the book and why he left in all the redactions was so he can see the government with this topic. There are classified discussions he wants to have but can't have. And the biggest reason for writing the book is to show folks, look, there are things here that I want to say to you, I can't say, but I've left them in to say I've tried to say them.
Sure.
I think some folk were a little bit disappointed with that reason for writing the book. I think, though, that was a very personal reason for Lou Elizondo writing this book. It wasn't necessarily for the UFO community, that particular reason, but it was for him to say, I've put everything I can in there, and there's still some stuff I can't say, but there's everything that I can. So does that point, Dan, then to, and this is a good question for Lou Elizondo, does that point to Lou really leaving everything he can out there in terms of what he knows because they've had to redact some of it?
Yeah, I think so. It suggests that he, at the very least, he's tried to push a bit more to get more out. I can't help but feel that Lou is hoping that, you know, the FOIA king, John Greenwald over at the Black Vault, is going to jump off of those redactions since, you know, they're identified as what they are. And the departments have to say exactly why they were redacted. And John kind of pushes back on those things and argues, you know, you redacted a whole page here. Is the whole page actually something you had to redact, or is it just one sentence at the beginning and end of that page? And this is what the FOIA guys do. And there are multiple FOIA workers or officers, I don't know what you call them, medical
clerks.
Clerks, yeah, let's go with that. FOIA clerks, there are multiple. So you always try and like push back against it to see, you know, maybe this guy's having a good day and he'll chuck me a document that isn't meant to be given out. You never know. You got to keep trying.
You could get someone in training, couldn't you? You could have someone who's literally new to the job and sharing something that actually they shouldn't have put that out.
Or
conversely, I'll always remember Jazz Shaw telling me, interview way back, Jazz Shaw, journalist involved in the topic, and he talked about putting a FOIA request in for a document he had in his possession. And he was told the document didn't exist. And he was like, well, there you go. So for me, immediately, FOIA's got its use, but also, there you go, it's not perfect, and it's certainly not flawless.
There's another really good example that I'm going to mention, just because it's relevant to the whole thing. If anyone listens to Patents Tell Stories, I'd highly recommend it. Really good podcast with Klaus and Garrett. Fantastic. They recently did a show looking at Hans Kammler, I want to say. What's it? Kammla. This guy was essentially like the head of all of the Nazis' kind of like weapons development and stuff like that. So if they did have secret weapons, this is the guy that would know.
Yeah.
So after the war, it was reported that he took a cyanide capsule and killed himself. For years, that was the same thing. Some people tried to like apply for any documentation they had on this guy, and one person got a response back saying, yeah, there are two documents on this guy, even though, you know, they'd never met him or anything like that, because he supposedly died. There are two documents over 100 pages each. We can't give them to you. About 5 years later, someone else sent the same FOIA request, and they said, we don't have anything.
Yeah.
So that kind of shifting thing, you know, it's not a homogenous department of one person and they all decide what to send out. You can get different responses based on different people. Lou even details that Chris Sherwood, I think it was, initially said that Lou did have responsibilities with ATIP. And then the Pentagon turned tail, and, you know, we have the statements we have today. By the way, Hans Kammler, he was in 2019, the US decided to release files that said that, yes, he was in fact in their custody. So while the world thought this guy was dead, he would have been working for the US, probably part of Project Paperclip, handing over all of their technology. So that's something that I'd really love to ask Lou about, and or for someone to ask him about. So,
see,
you know,
two things. Yeah, two things on that, right? So one, I 100% believe something like those Nazi scientists, whether it was part of Operation Paperclip or something else, were kind of given the option of, you're coming over to work for us, obviously. You can do that publicly. So like a Wernher von Braun, you know, those kind of guys who went over. Mm-hmm. Von Braun went over, didn't he? Yeah, famously. He was,
He's,
and publicly. But yes. Do you think they were also given the option of, you know, being suicided but not actually being killed? And you can work for us privately, and as far as anyone knows, you're dead. and yeah, have absolutely. That option, like, and, potentially.
And there's an advantage to telling the world that this person's dead anyway. You know, Russia's not going to come and try and get that scientist if they think that he's dead, right? That's just the way it works.
So there you go. Look at the US, and we're talking about a new cover-up begins. That war finished. Russia, the US, all the allies, you know, well done. We've fought together to end this evil. As soon as they were going to win that war, they'll have all been drawing up plans for, but how do we come out of this on top? How do we make sure we've got the best scientists, the best weapons, the best secrets? And before you know it, you're back in a cold war, weren't you, with Russia and everything else? So
crazy stuff happened as well. There was one event where during a rocket test, the guidance system had been sabotaged by the people that they brought over as part of Operation Paperclip, and the missile crashed into a town and, you know, blew up a bunch of buildings. So these Nazis were actively working against US interests whilst working for the US. And it paints a very interesting picture, doesn't it?
Dan, cut off one head, two heads prevail, you know?
Hail Hydra.
Yeah, that's the one. I just had that one from a little boy the other day who's three and is running about with a Captain America shield at the moment everywhere. The other one, where do you sit, Dan, honestly, on this whole ATIP, OSAP thing? And being really honest, I need to read back over it, but there still seems murky water around ATIP being an official program, Lou saying he was in charge of it, it seems to be, just from looking at a couple of statements, I would have to go back and check them, that Lou may have slightly contradicted himself in terms of OSAP to ATIP, assigned responsibilities, how official the programs were. And I know some people were trying to be condescending with this, but making out that ATIP was more of a pet project within the government than something official. Personally, I don't see why that would be an issue, because I get why that would happen for something like this. But what do you think around just that whole area of conversation and the water still being a bit murky?
So I always think back to the reporting of Tim McMillan from The Debrief. He's got a lot of experience talking to intelligence officials and knowing the workings of the Pentagon and, you know, the government beyond. And he's always said that ATIP was what's known as a working group, which is, you know, a bunch of people kind of doing things off the books. But he also emphasizes this is how it all starts. Every single program starts this way. So working groups are kind of programs, and programs are kind of working groups. And this is just kind of what happens. And I think the disconnect is in kind of not understanding the nuances of that and exactly how things work inside. You know, we think of programs maybe as something with an office and a mailing address or something like that. Lou clearly had an office. He clearly had people working for him doing this. You know, we've heard countless stories from countless sources now. Chris Mallon, what did he walk into if they didn't have an office, you know, and talk to them and say, can I get access? The sticking point seems to be that OSAP, ATIP handover, where, you know, Lou became director, supposedly, when that handover happened, and then he shuttered immediately the Skinwalker Ranch stuff and focused on the military sightings. Mm-hmm. The guys running OSAP seem to use ATIP as a nickname for OSAP in some ways.
Yeah.
But I think people are just getting their wires crossed. I can understand why Lou would go, I'm going to use the nickname for that and bring it in-house and do it this way. And just multiple things having multiple names. I mean, you know, it just, wires get crossed and things get confused, especially when we're talking about programs run out of OUSDI and this DIA and different places where they can have the same name, but they're fundamentally different programs because they're just run by different people. But for me, it's not too much of a sticking point, I guess.
No, it's not for me. But do you think it's an element of that either people have just, and I include all sides on this, whether it's your Strattons, Akatskis, Elizondos, whoever it might be, they have tripped up over their words at some point, or they've been deliberately obfuscative themselves, or they've just had to work their way around the wording of certain things as they've been trying to have conversations that they've just been not quite sure where exactly the line could be towed. Thinking of how often a David Grush would state very clearly as an orator, I cannot go into this because blah, 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 blah. Maybe that's just how some of this manifested. I don't know. I just think from all sides, it's still a little murky, but I can also understand. I think one thing I can do pretty well is step back and look at a bigger picture of things.
Sure.
And be able to say, I think in all of this, all of these people we talk about have lied at some about several things at several points, and probably still do, but some for good reasons, some for bad reason, some might be for really stupid reasons that actually don't make a whole lot of sense, but it doesn't matter if they make a whole lot of sense at this point, because they're kind of small lies along the way, and the greater truth is still there, and the all the objectives are still there, but people are still getting so hung up in just those little tiny small details.
It feels like people distracts. Are trying to catch people out. Yeah. I'm never a fan of that. Like, I understand paying attention to the details and staying on top of it, but there's also just knowing that people are human. And we spoke about it in the last episode as well, where over the years, he's left certain people out of the story until they came forward later. So I wonder if everyone came forward together, if there wouldn't have been a need to kind of create a situation where this confusion happens, you know? Yeah. We could have just said, Jay Stratton was leading it, and here he is to tell you in his own way, you know, that kind of thing. Versus, oh yeah, no, I was working on it, and the other people will talk about it when they can, but this is what I did.
I've not met anyone or spoken to anyone in this subject in the last, 4.5 years that is flawless. That I can't, even if it's from my own opinion at one point or other, they've done something I've went, well, that was a bit stupid. Or they've said something where I've went, well, that was a bit silly. Or, I don't quite believe that. And that's across the board. But
sure,
that's not always from a place of me knowing. Sometimes it's just for me going, they shouldn't have done that.
Yeah.
But
and has the solution to any of those things, any of those moments for you ever been, it was a psyop and they're lying to you on purpose? Or is it just like, humans are clumsy sometimes?
Yeah, that. The whole they're just a person, and just because a person ran something really important, or like right now people who are presidents or whatever they may be are in really important positions, or people trying to be presidents, and I'm talking about all political folks in the US right now and all that kind of stuff, don't make mistakes, or themselves are flawless. They all make mistakes. So
yeah
from the top down in every form of government. And again, let's even I'm not in the US, I'm in the UK. Look at the state of our government right now. We went from what we thought was I've said, folks, I'm not political. We went from what we thought was a really bad government with loads of rich people that were rinsing us to the government that was going to help us. And it seems to be worse, like, for a lot of people. And is that deliberately? Is that ineptitude? Is that inefficiency? Is it incompetence? Is it the ones before done such a bad job? Is it these just aren't up to the job? Who knows? But they're there in a position that I will never get to or aspire to. You know,
how about a football analogy? When you got like someone like Messi who takes a shot out of the goal and misses, and people are like, "Oh shit, he's the worst player ever now." No, he just made a mistake. You know, he had a momentary bad day.
Messi's not got a great penalty record from 12 yards out, there, but give him a free kick 30 yards from goal, so more than twice the distance, he'll put it in the top corner.
Sure. There you go. Like, we all have our skills, we all have our blind spots, and we've just got to use a little bit of empathy and compassion and understand that that's the case.
Yeah. Do you know what can help with that, Dan?
Go on.
Elk meat. So we're going to move on to Joe Rogan. Yeah. So remember, Joe Rogan was famously sponsored by elk meat for a while.
Yeah.
So Rogan podcast, 2 hours long. Again, I've only got one note really to take away from this. There were some really interesting stories and whatnot. I'm sure I can imagine a few you might bring up, Dan. But the main one for me was Lou Elizondo talking about the offshore oil rig object, the size of a city block, whizzing by one of these structures and being picked up by, you know, undersea instrumentation. Really interesting to hear him talk about something that size out in the ocean. Love to follow up on some of that with Lou. That for me was the big standout call out on here that we didn't hear on anything else.
I had to go and look up what an oil derrick was, because I was like, he would have just said like an oil rig, right? If he meant oil rig, what's an oil derrick? So I looked it up, and a derrick is specifically, you know, in the middle of an oil rig, you've got the big tower.
Yeah.
That's the derrick.
Moro Casino. America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
like a social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
So, enormous, but not as wide as maybe, you know, people took away when they thought oil rig, but still
huge. Yeah, because the rest of it's above the water. That's the bit that goes under. And
yes, yeah, exactly. That kind of, yeah, all the way down. So something could go past it that was bigger than it and not be that wide. But in terms of the height of the thing, like, enormous.
Yeah. So that was the big takeaway for me. Hearing about that, that's the kind of stuff that I think people who were disappointed by the book wanted more of. That's what I'm hoping we get more of in Lewis' media tour interviews, little snippets like that that aren't in the book that he can bring out and talk about. I suppose something like that, I'm like, why not have that in the book? That's the kind of sensational stuff that people want to hear. You would want, if Lou Elizondo's book, in hindsight, I'll talk generally for what I think a lot of people would have wanted. If you could have a full book, which is a third of the size, but it's just little snippets like that, of Lou going, I remember once reading about a case where we found a city block size UFO, UAP or USO under the water that whizzed by at this place, this time. People would have taken that over the life story. Right or wrong, that's not what Lou was doing, but people would have taken that sort of, you know, something sensational after sensational after sensational.
Yeah, I think that's true, but this is where we kind of get that tension, right, between people that have been in the subject for ages and people that just never look at it. Because people that never look at it, you hear about Colares, you hear about Roswell, you hear about GoFast, Kimball. Like, these things are crazy. Those things hit, you know, someone like my mom. Like, this hits us. So I wonder if he included ones that people can find public information on purpose. Mm. Just yeah. So they can go to Google and go, wait, is this nonsense? And, oh, no, it's not. There's a video. Oh, there's some public. Oh, wow, this is, oh, God, okay, on with the book.
But the interactive book,
yeah. But you're also right. Like, I would love, you know, I could watch Lou for an hour just tell UFO stories of cases that they came across in ATIP. Whether, you know, they were found to be anomalous or not, I think that would be awesome.
Yeah. Anything on Rogan you want to bring up? Because I literally just had that from the Rogan. Everything else, I was like...
Yeah, I got a few things here. So, you know, Lou mentions the 4K footage. The close-up stuff isn't being released, but we're well beyond reasonable doubt. He emphasizes that he's the guy that would know if the US had anything like this in their inventory. And he really drives that home at the beginning of this. So I, you know, want to highlight that. There was a process there, Lou says, to deconflict that info. Essentially talking across departments and stuff like that to find out, wait, was this you? Was this us? Or blue on blue, as they call it, you know, the mm-hmm. good guys versus the good guys.
Yeah.
So Lou could look at that kind of stuff. He could see if the Tic Tac was just a jet that was flying and confused the pilots. And he says it wasn't. So this is the guy that would know. Lakatsky is once again highlighted as being, you know, number one rocket scientist, gave Lou his job, this kind of stuff. And once again, I just wanted to underline it and scream it in big letters, get Lakatsky on the stand. Like, he's always so cagey in interviews. The last interview he was in, it was mentioned that he mentioned we got inside a UFO. And yeah. Then that's it. He stopped talking then. So I understand if he can't give me or you or, you know, people publicly this information, but he should be giving it to the elected leaders and the people who are investigating this stuff. Otherwise, they're essentially... You know, they're trying to run a race with a missing foot while thinking that they have both.
Or he has in the background already, or he doesn't want to because he knows some of the potential consequences.
Yeah, possibly. And that, unfortunately for me, kind of ends up drawing a line and kind of going, okay, well, then we might as well give up on disclosure from the government if the people who really have this information just don't want to talk, even the people that we think are
on
our
side. And that's why a lot of folks have, though. From the UFO community are like, I don't need it from the government.
Yeah. And I mean, I wonder if Lou would say that was success. You know, that he's pushed so much and got the conversation so far that people have just given up on government disclosure and are living their lives as if we're not alone and are acting accordingly. You know, it doesn't change your day to day, but in talking about things and thinking about the universe and your place in it, it's going to change maybe a little bit of who they are. I don't know. There was a cool section where Lou spoke about Windows, and he kind of emphasized that we have to be careful when talking about Windows on Craft because it's witnesses deciding that they're Windows when in fact they could be something completely different, and that's just our, well, you know, that's what we think of with Windows, so we call it
same with the lights.
Yes, exactly. I thought that was worth mentioning because it's just you've always got to keep that perspective, you know.
And is it not then fair to say though that it's the same with any part of a UFO sighting or experience? That includes, like we've said before, that these things are flying. Well, no, we are saying they're flying. We don't know that they are flying.
Yes.
And literally everything about, like I've said before, a UFO could be what we see, but inside it's actually just a static viewing platform based somewhere else. And this is the projection that comes through to this reality. But someone, like, you know, look, the way I think of it, you know, Quantum Leap style, sure. where Al would go into the unit and he would be in the hologram and he would see Sam and everything, but he was just in one static place. So that could be a UFO. You know, they go into something and it looks like they're flying and piloting, but actually they're not moving. They're just standing still, which would take away the whole gravity thing as an issue because, you know, they're actually just watching a big screen.
Yeah, absolutely. You're right. It's a solution to it that doesn't need a warp drive. And I think this is where we're going to find the solution to these problems in kind of thinking like that, essentially just out of the box, kind of getting out of these kind of, well, ruts that we've got ourselves stuck in, I guess. There was a really interesting moment where Lou brought up the nuclear agreement between the Soviet and the US, where they had a phone line, and in case they detected something, they could just pick up the phone line and say, hey, did you launch? And find out. There are a number of these kind of happenings going back. Robert Salas, one famous one, the nukes being turned off. But the one that I really love, mostly because there's a really great documentary about it and the guy's a goddamn hero. He passed away, unfortunately. Stanislav Petrov. The documentary is called The Man Who Saved the World. And you can go on YouTube and you can watch it for free. But this is a guy that when it came through on his hand that the US had launched nuclear missiles towards Russia, he refused. He refused to press the button. And he was shamed for it. And he lived his life kind of doing tours and, you know, preaching peace and things like that. And he went to his grave kind of preaching such things, kind of emphasizing or explaining, you know, there's a really great clip in the film where he's next to a Minuteman silo in the US. Mm-hmm. And he's like, why do we need this? Why do we need it? You know, we have so many bombs that we could obliterate the world like 10 times over. What a pointless endeavor and what a waste of money and effort and time and fear and worry. And yeah, my heart broke for him because he never got to see a kind of a peacetime emerge between the two nations. But this is a very human effect of that nuclear agreement there. And yeah, we need this. We need that with more countries. Imagine if there was, say, you know, Phoenix Lights, for example. Imagine if that happened around a plane in the middle of the Atlantic. Who has jurisdiction there? Like we need multiple countries to be talking to each other in these ways, especially about these unidentifieds, so that we can figure them out. I always think of the movie Arrival, you know, where a ship lands in each country and the aliens actually want the countries to work together, and they've given them different puzzle pieces each, and only when they bring them together can they actually get to what the aliens want them to understand. We've heard about non-human
we are not there as a species.
That's
we
the
have,
thing.
We have seen very recently, and with various diseases even that we have,
yes,
and issues we have, we are not there. Like, and that's where the whole disclosure thing, everything will be great afterwards. I'm like, why would it be? What's going to change? Like, people, where we are as a society isn't a good place.
The gorilla analogy, if you apply it to exactly what you just said, you know, Luke talks about the gorilla and the key and getting out of the cage. if you're the zookeeper and there's one gorilla coming out, it's an easier decision than if there are 20 different gorillas and potentially 20 different gorilla reactions.
The kid, like,
yeah, right?
Makes the decision even easier.
Yeah, exactly. And unfortunately, sometimes in these situations, people will judge the whole group by the actions of one. And so, yeah, you're totally on the money there. Like, we're not ready as a species. Some of us are, some people are, but not everyone. And that's what we're going through right now.
Far too small a number. Ready.
Yeah.
And a few people joked, you know, I mentioned Harambe in the last one because I couldn't remember the name of the gorilla that got shot.
Was it Harambe?
Humanity as a species. If we were that gorilla, before we were even shot by the zookeeper in panic, we would have mauled that child to bits. That, for me, is where humanity is, like, as an overall species right now. That child would have been smashed to bits against the side of that wall.
Like, and just to kind of give the peaceful people their due, that child will be smashed to pieces against the wall whilst a bunch of people stood around screaming, not knowing what to do because they didn't want to attack the gorilla or be attacked.
Sending thoughts and prayers their way.
Thoughts and prayers to the kid in Harambe. Yeah, exactly.
Anything else on Rogan?
Let me just have a little scroll through. Why the Pentagon teases us, why they keep the secret. This came up in another interview as well, and it was really kind of highlighting that no official wants to stand in front of the country when they're tasked with protecting the country and say, we can't protect you. We don't know. And that seems to be the reason that they don't want this out. I think that's fair enough. I can understand that a government person wouldn't want to stand there when the only thing they had to say was, I don't know. It sucks.
And it's surely easier to protect a country or protect anything by not openly coming out and saying you're protecting it or having to justify that protection. Just if the country is actively under a state of protection, then they're doing their job as far as they are concerned.
Yeah, 100%. You know, people want to keep their jobs, right? They want to keep putting food on the table for their families. So instead of going up and shooting themselves in the foot and being fired the next day and saying, I don't know, they're just going to go, nothing to see here until they can actually present.
Do you know, it's a little bit like, you know, Jack Nicholson at the end of A Few Good Men. Spoilers, folks. Movie's really
perfect.
Old.
I know exactly what you're going to say, yes.
But you know when he has that little speech about, you know, why I called the code red, why I gave this order, basically the shit I've went through, the stuff I've seen, what I've done and sacrificed for this country. That's a guy who, like many folks in various countries' militaries, they don't need or want to be glamorized or in the public eye have all this attention and praise heaped on them. It's like, it's a pride thing for them. It's a patriotism. It's having known themselves, I served my country, I served it well, and I'd done what I had to do to allow people to do their daily lives. And all those mundane things that people are going to be doing while they complain about people like me, they're only getting to do it because of people like me. And that's his overarching point, isn't it? You can see him as a bad guy in it if you want, but the best bad guys have an element of their story you understand, or a real gripe that you can go, might not agree, but I can see why. And I think that's where that kind of ties in for me. There are people who are just like, I think of the Air Force in this respect, who don't want this to come out, who want to keep it secret, who are going, we're keeping the country secret. The US is still the dominant superpower. We've still got the best technology. We've still got the best army, still got the best, you know, soldiers, all that kind of stuff. And we don't want to have this conversation because it doesn't need to be had. It's better that it's not had. And that's the way they see it. And they don't need to come out and say that publicly next to Susan Goff on a stand at the DOD or whatever, because they're like, they would feel they're above that. And the public in that respect don't matter or need to know.
Yeah. I would say you're bang on there, as damning as it is to the public. That's exactly it. You know, the public to officials are a bunch of children and they're the parents looking after them, and you just got to keep them safe. And if that means not telling them that there's a monster in the closet, then they just won't tell the kids.
Is it because they can't handle the truth? Some of them can.
I like it.
Some of them can. CNN, Dan?
Just a few more things. So one, I just wanted to highlight the fact that Lou barely mentions his book during this Rogan interview. So anyone that decides that Lou is a grifter, you can shove it. He had the world's biggest media platform and he did not try to make money off of it. So I think that speaks volumes there. Really like the stuff that he spoke about where the Greeks thought, you know, they were just plants and us. And then we found fungus, and then we're finding all these different versions of life, and that Mother Nature defies us and we shouldn't put her in a box. If you've seen Nope, that's exactly the message of that movie. Don't put nature in a box because it ends up biting you. And then the last bit, and really this is a question for you, I guess. Lou is asked about Lazar, and he doesn't seem to know a lot about him. He's been asked about Lazar before, and it seems that he's kept his distance. But with To the Stars kind of being part of the story, To the Stars published Bob Lazar's biography.
Yeah.
And they did it whilst To the Stars Academy was still going and Lou was employed there.
Yep.
And when they published it not on the same imprint as Secret Machines, as all their other books. They published it on Interstellar and barely marketed the thing at all. And for me, that said a lot about what some members of To the Stars Academy may think of Bob's story. Do you feel the same about that? What do you think?
I think it's too big of a step for a Lou Elizondo or a David Grush or a Chris Mellon to come out and say that Bob Lazar's legitimate, because I think it starts to connect too many dots too quickly. I'm not saying it is. I still think there are elements of the Bob Lazar story that would be true. If it turns out to be all BS one day, I'll be disappointed. But
115 elements that are true, maybe?
Yeah, but it's it seems like far too long a game to play.
Sure.
And to get that much out of it, like to come out in the 80s and then do what, a handful of interviews over 20 years, not sell movie rights and book deals, and you know, it's like, what was he getting out of it?
He did sell the movie rights. I think it was MGM at one point were going to adapt it, but they didn't. And there is a new documentary coming out, but it's not a dramatization.
Getting 35 years now.
Yeah,
it just doesn't seem like the best way to make that money. But that's where I'm kind of like with like Lou and the book and everything. I'm like, he's making money off of that. For anyone who's, it's a New York Times bestseller, I've got no issue with that. So the whole grift thing, right, is bullshit. But we know that that's a troll thing. But he was making money doing what he was doing for the US government.
Yeah.
Healthily come out of that and jump in with Tom DeLonge and Two of the Stars, and then that goes tits up, and it just seems like a really silly way to try and make a different stream of revenue than what you were making.
Yeah.
Like, you know what? I've got a podcast where I'm making $1 million a year. What I'm going to do, though, I'm going to still try and make that $1 million, but I really want to sell fucking pineapples in Scotland in winter.
I'm going into modelling.
Okay, that you might be successful. I'm sure if you sell enough or you get signed up on the right contracts, great, but you're kind of doing this anyway. The other, Chris Mellon, you know, a guy who is not asking anyone for cash. It seems redundant for him to jump into the UFO conversation to make a quick buck.
Yeah, I've even seen people say, well, you know, people that have money like more money, so of course he would be trying to make money off this.
Yeah,
I can't go buy Chris Mellon's book. I can't donate to Chris Mellon and buy him a coffee or something.
Yeah, if Chris Mellon wanted more money, surely he wants a lot more money. Not like, I've got $20 billion in my bank. I want another couple of hundred grand. That's nothing that he's earning that in interest per day.
No, he's on Fiverr.com, just doing odd jobs on the weekend.
Yeah. he'd go in like melons, you know, like selling like watermelons, you know. I don't know. Anyway, before we get too off
everyone's
topic,
favorite melons, I can see it now.
Yeah, it just doesn't make sense to me that this is where the money is for these people. When surely there are plenty of ways they can make money in the U.S. government, getting involved in all kind of stuff that would make them very, very, very rich. So
yeah, I saw Ross Coulthart recently. Someone asked him during an AMA, Ask Me Anything on Reddit, if he was writing another book. And he just said no. He's like, there's no money in publishing. I'm not doing that. I'm doing this thing. You know, he's working with News Nation and stuff like that. A much more immediate kind of turnaround.
Someone bring up the New York Times thing. And again, Lou's got a publishing deal now. Lou will be making money, which is great because he should, for the time and the effort and just doing this for whatever people want to take from it, whether it's information, entertainment, whatever. That's how the world works. My point being, before I forget it, is so someone asked about, you know, to be a New York Times bestseller, incredible achievement, regardless of when you do it. But to me, and from what a few folks said, you have to sell a lot less these days than you did 30 years ago, you know, when there wasn't all these media types. And that's a bit like, though, getting a number one single in the charts, where you can sell 20 or 30,000 copies of a single or a download and get to number one, where Oasis v Blur, they were selling like into the millions each, you know, and getting number twos and number threes. So
yeah,
that for me is just a non-argument now, that it's getting the message out there, it's getting the UFO conversation out there, and it's doing it in a big way. And this book and the whole book and everything, like I've said to you, Dan, in the first recording, is there for folks who aren't that into the topic or haven't got into the topic yet. And it maybe pulls them more into that conversation.
Yeah, and it's great that Lou's got that, you know, number one New York Times bestseller kind of label now. Because guarantee, when the paperback of that book comes out, it's going to say the New York Times bestseller on it, right?
Yeah.
And that in itself is a filter for people. There are people out there who would pick up a book or not pick up a book based on that, or would be more likely to. It's a great thing, you know, congratulations, Lou. Like
people will be buying the book this week because it's number one on the New York Times bestseller list.
Yeah. So was Macaulay. Oh, there's something to this. Interesting. I was a little curious, but now it's that. Sure. Let's give it the time. I know two of my friends.
All New York Times bestsellers.
Yeah. Two of my friends who have never really entertained the conversation before beyond like, oh, you know, aliens exist in the universe and that's it. And they wouldn't talk further than that. They both bought the book this week.
Yep.
So if that's the kind of person that it's appealing to, the fence sitters and pulling them over and kind of dropping these truth bombs on them, amazing. It's great. We all need to be a part of this conversation.
Any more on Rogan?
No. That's kind of everything.
I've got the one comment left from the CNN interview, Dan. I think it was the same one that you had that just came out a few days ago.
Yes.
Literally, Lou Elizondo on CNN, we have something that is made by non-humans, aliens, or to whatever vernacular he says, or something that's been here all along. So again, that's a big statement to make on that big news channel.
Yeah. And it was so nice to not hear that laughed at. No X-Files music, just talking about it as if it was, you know, a terrorist attack. Like, same tone, just news, matter of fact. This is what's going on. And I imagine that will be clipped and it'll hit quite a few people hard as they're walking through the living room to the kitchen or whatever, and they heard that on the news. That's a stopping your tracks moment, right?
I have a discussion point here and then some listener stuff to finish off with.
Sure, let's go for it.
So I feel at this point, Dan, that this wave of attention is a full stop at the end of a sentence. And maybe now we need to be looking at things going forward as a new chapter. I think for progress to happen, for new progress, we need new cases, new information, new faces to come forward and to corroborate what Lou has confirmed, what David Grush has confirmed, and start picking this up, or this can fade away into the background again.
I wouldn't entirely disagree with that. I think I used the term in the last show we did, talking about this as like a save point in a computer game. It feels like the level's complete, you know, this is where we can come back to now. This is where the conversation is. It's not in starseeds and the wishy-washy things we've had since the 60s where nothing really much has happened. This is now like an amazing ground floor to have this discussion from. And there are going to be so many people growing up and going to work for NASA or various other space agencies who go in not thinking, are we alone? But thinking, we are not alone. I want to find the proof. I want to be the one to get that Nobel Prize. And I think that's, quite frankly, freaking awesome. I can't imagine how excited some people out there are who are in the positions who get to look at the radar screens and track missions to space and things like that. I bet they're all watching for these things now.
You would hope so. And I think for me, it's like that. I'd love to see that next step because I think we're really ready for it. We talked about the David Grush op-ed that would help keep things going. The James Fox, the program, if that can get a distributor ASAP to come out before New Year, that'd be wonderful. I still think, just realistically, not knowing how long these things take, surely it's going to be another good few months. But I'd love to see that earlier. I see us getting some really, really early positive reaction from a couple of folks that have seen it.
Yeah, so that's some good. Really good reaction. And James has said that he wants to do it completely independently, which, of course, increased the costs. He posted the other day to Twitter slash X. I never know what to say anymore. Yeah. But the trailer alone costs about $25,000 to get made by someone who's good at making trailers. So this is the price, you know, for anyone that's calling James a grifter as well. 25 grand he's dropping on a trailer just to try and make, to break even on this thing. It's not about the money for these people. It's not. It's about the message.
Again, Dan, if it is, they're not very bright because they can go into another topic and make more money with those talents and skills they've got.
Yep.
So, for the love of Christ. Listener stuff to get through, Dan. Craig says, and this may be slightly different now just based on what we discussed last. Craig said, it's still shocking to me how very little mainstream media coverage Lou Elizondo's book is getting. Yes, there's News Nation, Joe Rogan, but where's CNN? We've just talked about CNN. That interview only just dropped. But what about the BBC, the New York Times, etc.? I scrolled through page after page on CNN and there's news of a celebrity's dog dying, but nothing about a former US intelligence official who studied UFOs saying we're not alone. Makes no sense. At some point, we the common people have to make some noise about this as to why the mainstream media are ignoring this topic. Obviously, taking CNN out of that now, do you think it's still been a slow, laboured process for more? Do you think it's going to be a longer-term build? What do you think is going to happen there?
I could see a longer-term build. You know, we've got two hearings rumoured for near future. Whether they happen, we don't know. You know, the field hearings didn't happen.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
So we'll see, because the hearings were covered on the BBC when they happened. You know, they had a live coverage. You could watch it. Yeah. So when official things like that happen, the mainstream, like the BBC and, you know, people like that, they all seem to be fine covering it. It just seems as if they don't want to cover podcasts and things like that, which is crazy to me. But, you know, I'm sure there's someone there that could justify the decision based on sourcing or something like that. So, yeah, I think as we go forward, we'll see more official things happening. And as more official things happen, we'll get more reports from places like BBC and things like that.
I done a couple of minutes, on GB News on it. And to be really fair to them, this was like last week, the male host was really into the subject. Sure. And the girl who was there, she was like really honest and I'm really sorry. Like, I don't know much about this, but you're saying blah, blah, blah. And he was the one that came back in to say to her, look, yeah, 100% there's something to this. It was like a few minutes before they hit the hour. So it was the kind of last kind of pieces. I'd have loved more time to talk about it, but it's still kind of where that conversation's at. But to be fair to the host, he was really, really good. And even the girl who was the other host, who was less obviously interested, she was really honest, but she was like, oh, it's fascinating. And he was, yeah. You could tell it seemed to be the type that he was going to go be like, during the breaks, go, look, this has happened, this has happened, this has
yeah,
happened.
Yeah, she was going to get the eye glaze on the break.
Yeah, yeah. And that was kind of nice to see and hear. But yeah, I think it could be a longer term burn with this one. As you say, over the next few weeks, more interviews. I think the momentum of more hearings, documentary, if Grush's op-ed is ever going to come out, then it would be a good time for that to happen, I feel.
Yeah. Yeah, it would. And this is all if things stay sensible as well. Like, if a ship shows up above a city tomorrow, then it's going to be all over the news. You know, like, this path we're currently on is over if that happens.
Yeah, if the Boeing Starliner starts getting sonar noises coming from it, Dan, or something, I don't know. Did you see that, yeah?
I did, yeah. I was listening to it, and it was really intriguing because the noises don't... They repeat for certain intervals, and then there's one noise that isn't consistent. So it's... I don't know what it is. I'm not going to speculate because I'll fuel someone going down a rabbit hole on this one. But really intriguing.
Yeah, I saw loads of comments, and we'll do a breakdown at some point later this week or next week with some little news bits. But I seen just in reading some statements on it, someone was saying it's something to do with not a malfunction, but an imperfection in the body or design of the craft, and something's happening because of that. And I was like, oh, okay, sure. That would make sense, but I don't know if that's true.
Have you ever thrown, like, you know, you do skipping stones across lakes?
Yeah.
Have you ever done that across ice?
Mm.
It gives you a really similar noise. It kind of sounds like sonar radar. So, when I heard it, my brain went to that, thinking, oh, is it like ice buildup? And
you've gone
full bath
or
something.
Ice crystals.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. See, this is why I don't want to speculate. It's aliens on the outside going, which means let us in their language.
This is like the whole wow signal thing where people debunked it by saying it was the microwave on the other side of the wall, in the kitchen. So Don says, hi, Andy. I've got to admit the book was heavy on the lose life stuff for me. I wasn't expecting that. That said, I think it's a fantastic book for people who are new or relatively new to the topic, with great information coming from what I consider to be one of the most reliable and informed sources we have. Looking forward to what comes next. Disclosure in some form by October. ! Don't know about disclosure in some form by October. I think some would say, Don, we have disclosure in some form already, and in your heart you'll know that. But Dan, what do you think then? Disclosure in some form by October?
It's that in some form that's getting me there, if I'm honest, because in some form it has happened already for a lot of us. You know, we are not alone. It's happened for me. I'm there. I'm not sure where you stand on that, but I know that I could probably find at least 10 people that would agree with saying, yeah, it's happened. Like, we're out. If disclosure to you means the government coming clean with what they know, and I won't say everything or nothing because we'll be here all day otherwise, I don't think we're going to get back that by October. It's going to be a while. I would say years, not months.
Yeah. Paul says, I was listening to the Rogan interview and was slightly disappointed. Luis Elizondo didn't go into much, and I find it frustrating. We keep getting little nibbles of info, and even Joe seemed annoyed, like, why are they teasing us? Just tell us what's going on. My question is, do you believe Lou, and do you think it's possible he's an agent of the government being allowed to speak on these things as some sort of a distraction from the truth of this, or is this genuine? It just seems strange he's being allowed to speak and publish info on the topic. Thank you. All the nice stuff.
Literally say that? I'm going to write that on my next email. All the nice stuff.
I tend to leave all the nice stuff people say off. thanks, Paul. What's your thoughts on that then?
I mean, interesting. I can't say that you can't debate that. Of course we can. Lou was an intelligence official. Personally, I trust Lou. I know that's a bias, technically, because I spent time with him and I would count him as a friend. But I would just kind of, when these questions come up about it being a distraction, I always think, well, from what? And I don't see it being a distraction from, you know, a terrorist bombing or wars or anything like that. They're kind of spoken about in the news. So,
like, who are you distracting? Because the UFO topic doesn't have 50% of the public looking at it, you know?
Yeah, exactly. So it's kind of confusing, but maybe that guy wants to write back in again and kind of say what it could be distracting from, rather than, you know, me talking as if there's nothing.
Or even I think, because he says of this, but I think means or this being genuine. So is there an element of, is it a distraction from the genuine aspect of the UFO phenomenon, and that maybe he's going down the route there that Lou is pulling us down a government route that takes you away from the real stuff that's going on?
Oh, I see. Yeah, I mean, that would be interesting, right? We definitely mentioned before about how Lou swore an oath to the country, and he wants the country he swore an oath to have the advantage and to be able to protect its citizens and things like that. You know, Lou gave his life, literally. He's dedicated his life to helping people. So I could see that why someone would think that Lou wants everyone to speak to about Lou's experience and only what Lou says. But also Lou kind of is one of the first people to expand his ideas and to change his ideas if presented with new information. So I'm not sure that necessarily is explains everything that Lou's been saying. He's out there just trying to get the word out about this subject, it feels like.
A few final thoughts to run through, Dan, just from listeners, then we'll wrap up because it's gone a lot longer than I expected. But it's been
again, it's lots to talk about. It's nice.
Yeah. E-O-G-H-A-N, is that Ian or Ewan? Ewan?
I would have said Ian.
Ian? So, Civil War. Or I can say like, Eoghan. Oh, yeah. So Eoghan. No, Ian, Ewan, whatever one it is, mate. Thank you very much for the pointer to the Spotify audiobook. Yeah, folks, if you've got Spotify Premium, jump on, click, type in imminent. You can listen to the audiobook. I wasn't sure I wanted to splash the cash for the hard copy, but Chris Mellon's foreword is worth the money on its own. I mean, it is one quarter of the book, to be fair. A super interesting framing of the UAP issue within the history of US intelligence failures. Dan, next comment, Gnosis says, thanks for the Brass Eye reference, and Dan doing some throwback nice. Moves by putting himself on mute. What was your Brass Eye reference? I missed that in the last one.
I can't remember. We had a few. We're off the cuff in it.
Nothing about cake?
Maybe cake?
Cake's a made-up drug, remember?
I think that might be it, actually.
Was it? Okay. Maybe. Dot says, Obama is in the index of the book, though, for the same page. So the page we talked about Obama not being referenced. Apparently he's on the index, so
interesting. So maybe an edit there. Nice catch.
Agent Black says, I'm fed up of people being underwhelmed by Lou at this or disappointed at Lou because of that. He simply came out of the shadows to shine a light on pressing issues at great risk to his family. Why do people think he owes us the world? Is it just me who finds the demands on this poor bloke completely unreasonable and unrealistic? He owes us nothing. I think from my point of view, it's either you've got the folks who think Lou is lying, disinfo, etc., etc., in which case he would be, given his background, probably well-placed to handle that and do all this. But on the other hand, like people like myself and Dan, Lou's telling the truth, he's doing this sincerely, then, yeah, it's a hell of a stress and strain to put on someone. And that's why I hope this whole venture with the book and everything, one, gets the message out, but two, he gets the compensation back to kind of try and enjoy his life, because Lou's not a young guy either. It's not as if he's in his 20s, you know. He would be looking at retiring and having a quiet, peaceful life and seeing the kids off to uni and everything like that, and just being able to relax and maybe go enjoy a few vacations and that kind of thing. So, Dan, I imagine you're along those lines with me.
Yeah, precisely. I'm not going to expound, but yeah, I concur.
Moro Casino. American Social Casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. American Social Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Byron says, Andy and Dan, if you haven't already done so, I strongly recommend Jesse Michael's recent interview with Danny Sheehan. I've not seen this yet. Danny states that Russell Targ and Pat Price were deeply connected to Scientology, with Danny personally viewing internal Scientology files on Price as a Scientology spy within the Stargate program. Curious how you view this. One I'd need to look into. Not seen that myself then.
So I've not seen the interview, but I knew about that with the remote viewers, because Hal Putoff is also, he has a past that's linked to Scientology.
And I've seen
it comes
that.
Up
I've
often. Seen... Yeah. It's just like, well, if you fell for that, you know, and I think they're fair questions, but we've never gotten Hal to answer a question about it, you know? He's not a Scientologist anymore, just to emphasize that. And also, Scientology is, I mean, it's a really problematic organization, right? Like, they do horrible things and so on and so forth. But
hi to all the Scientologists listening.
Yeah, hi. But like we said earlier, people are human, and sometimes they make mistakes, and I can see why it would appeal from a certain perspective and why maybe you join up, but those people eventually left. So yeah, we'd have to dig into it and see more, I guess, from the horse's mouths.
Good enough for Tom Cruise.
They joined. I mean, he grew like a whole 10 inches, right, when he joined Scientology. Is that true?
Easter's in a box. The truth is up there. That's a quick thing for me. That's fine. I'll get that answered. Strange but True says, thanks, guys. Haven't read the book yet, but interesting listening to hear you talk about it. Easton Smith says, great conversation. I'm one of your remote viewing skeptic followers. For what it's worth, I think it would be extremely cool if remote viewing turns out to be real. I love it when a big discovery is hiding in plain sight. Okay, nice. Ross. That said, I wish you two went beyond if you're skeptical, try it, to if you're skeptical, design an experiment to test it, or encourage psychologists and neuroscientists to test it. It should be pretty elementary to design experiments that can prove remote viewing works. Push people too rigorously to study it, they could legit discover a sixth sense, which would be Nobel worthy. I think for me, there's enough out there to say that there have been incidents where remote viewing has worked. So whether it works often or how well it works, I don't know. But just with some of the cases where they have found missing persons and whatnot, there's clearly something to it from some people.
Yeah, the big thing for me is always to refer to the document that you can go and you can look around the CIA reading room. It's a report basically kind of that happened just before they closed the whole thing down because they were assessing it, seeing whether the money should be spent or anything. So these people did so many experiments with it, and remote viewing has gone through so many like rounds of experiments where people, they'll design an experiment and then go, oh, okay, we could have been tricked this way. Let's do it again, but we'll close that off. Ah, we could have still been tricked this way. Let's do it again, but we'll close that off. That's happened so many times that I'm struggling to think of any other scientific discovery that had to go through that many rounds before they could prove it. The document that kind of contains the reasoning for shutting it down doesn't say it doesn't work. It doesn't say we're not spending money on it because it's nonsense. It says we're not spending money on it because we get hits about 32-33% of the time. So, you know, a third of the time remote viewing works according to the people that pulled the funding. For me, that's more than enough to kind of learn it and entertain it and read all I can about it. Maybe I'll try and find the link to that document so you can include it in the description to make, you know, people like the question asker here just give them an easier time. But also, I forgot to send you the link for the last show we did with the remote viewing kind of courses, and I added those links in on YouTube so people can see there and have a watch and just see that there's a protocol to it. It's not people sat going, I see, you know, like psychic in movies. There's a protocol to it, and it's really mundane and it's really boring, but it bears results to the point where, like I said, the people that shut it down, that pulled its funding, said it works, but not every time, so we don't want to use it.
Yeah. George Harris says, not much about crash retrievals, huh? Was there a disappointing lack of crash retrieval chat for you in the book?
Not so much, only because through knowing, you know, the conversations Lou has had in the past on shows and interviews and things, I didn't expect much of it. He's never been involved with the crash retrieval.
I was going to say that seems to be a thing, doesn't it? That he wasn't involved in those programs.
Yeah, exactly. You know,
but would you have expected? Was it as fair then for like maybe George's point of view? You would still have expected him to have heard or at least had more speculative conversations from people around it? Because he still speculates in the book.
I think if there was one that I would have expected him to include, or two candidates that if he was going to include a crash retrieval piece, it would have been talking about Roswell a bit more, because he did touch on it, but he didn't go into it a crazy amount. But we did get that, you know, really nice section where Lou says that Roswell gave them their playbook for how to cover these things up, and he specifies the steps that were formalized and they'd go through. But also that 1933, you know, the Mussolini craft, the crash, David Grush has spoken about that a lot, and I'd be surprised if Lou doesn't know anything about it or didn't come across anything to do with it.
Yeah. Overall then, Dan, where do you see this final question, where do you see this whole media run ending up then? Are we going to get Lou Elizondo in 6 months' time still doing podcast circuits, all that kind of thing? Or do you think it's a much more limited run to go away for a while or even for good from like a media point of view? What do you think?
I think the second option there. I think he's come back, he's hitting home run after home run in these interviews, gathering intrigue. And the question, he's asking people to start asking questions of officials of the government. These are going to result in hearings. We might see him in a hearing in 6 months. But in terms of, you know, after he's kind of done the rounds here, I don't think he's going to come back in 6 months and do more podcast interviews, or in 2 years, he's going to do more podcast interviews. I think this is a big knowledge dump to kind of plant his marker there, hit that save point. And now going forward, like maybe just kind of lay in the foundations so that when these future whistleblowers come out that we haven't heard from that apparently we're going to, they have a bit more to bounce off and they can take the conversation forward then.
Awesome. Cool. We'll leave it there then, Dan. That's a good half hour longer than I was expecting, but that's all good. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, as always, for having me. And thank you to everyone that sent in questions and comments. It's fun. You know, it's lofty as the subject is, it just scratches that itch for me.
And it's nice sometimes, folks, to hear the nicer stuff and people enjoying talking about the subject and some of the toxic shit from the cesspool of social media that can go on online. Anyway, folks, enjoy your evenings, enjoy your mornings, your afternoons, whatever you're doing, and speak to you very, very soon. That is all for this episode. Thank you very much for tuning in. Don't forget to leave the podcast a review on your chosen platform. Apple and Spotify do make a huge difference to the algorithm. If you're checking the show out on YouTube, please don't forget to like and leave a comment on here as well. Any sharing you do is very much appreciated on any social media platform. And finally, you can listen to shows ad-free and sponsor-free in their glorious full versions by subscribing for less than the price of a coffee on Apple, Spotify. Just search That UFO Podcast Premium. YouTube, you can sign up and be a member, or you can do that through patreon.com. Thank you very much for listening, folks.
It wasn't a tic-tac and not quite a saucer, more like a hubcap designed by Chaucer, a little baroque and quite steampunk, like Alice was playing bass for the Parliament of Funk. The little fucker hovered right inside of my window, and when I shoved out the screen, he...
Moro Casino! America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Moro Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.